Hello everyone, it's Richard Lewis here with another video, and today I'm going to be going back and revisiting something that we've been talking about a lot, that is the whole ESL, WESA, PEA, and the Counter-Strike landscape as it stands, all of this good stuff. So let's just start a little bit. There was one thing I did allude to in other videos, and that was why PEA was formed. Now, for the longest period of time, we've known that certain entities, and I would argue every entity, if I'm honest about it, wanted to have an exclusivity league for Counter-Strike. But it was really ESL who got caught with their hands in the cookie jar. And that's because there are many organizations that don't like the fact ESL has a stranglehold on the industry, dominates the landscape as much as they do. And when they invariably get wind of what ESL is planning, the leaks happen, and the leaks will always happen to ESL as a result of that. And, you know, look, I said this at the time. There's plenty of organizations, tournament organizers, that are saying, oh, exclusivity leagues are terrible, and they've planned to do things in the past or have done things like that in the past with other games or are trying to work with other entities to create their own exclusivity league. Certainly, there isn't anyone who's operating from a point of altruism when it comes to Counter-Strike, because there's money to be made. When there's money to be made, everyone's logic and thought process and understanding of the big picture and the greater good, it all goes out the window. So why did PEA get formed? Well, ESL obviously created WESA. WESA was the kind of leftovers, the remnants, a new way to basically spice up and present some leftovers for that exclusivity league by making it look like a world association. It's called the World Esports Association. It only has European or Eastern European teams in it. It doesn't have anyone from South America or North America or any other territory. So it's not global. It claims to be an esports association. It doesn't represent all of esports. In fact, it represents only one league, and that is the ESL Pro League. That's the only tournament it has the license for. It claims to be an association. It's not open to all. It claims to be an arbitrary body, although it openly states that its arbitration can't really be enforced and is ultimately meaningless. And we've already done a video on that, which for some reason didn't blow up, explaining all the reasons why the WESA arbitrary panel and the arbitrary body is a sham, basically. It's an illusion. It's not going to achieve anything meaningful. So ultimately, that's why the World Esports Association just doesn't have a lot of respect. You know, it's none of the things it professes to be. And quite clearly, it was designed to be able to bring together a collection of teams to play in a league with the view of, in exchange for financial inducement, to go exclusive. Now, you will notice there's an absence of North American teams in it. PEA wanted to be the equivalent. WESA didn't offer them enough money, and PEA decided to make their own association as a result of it and do what WESA are trying to do for Europe and eventually NA, I imagine. They're trying to do it for North America. Now, you know all that. I've told you all that many times. I think it's a fairly open secret now. I mean, everything that's going on is so depressingly transparent. I think people understand exactly what's going on, but perhaps there's something that you haven't factored in to the equation, and that is exactly why PEA, these North American team owners, felt absolutely threatened and compelled to create PEA at this particular time. So this is to do with game developers, and game developers have basically said, we are going to take control of our own products with the exception of honoring some existing partnerships, but the future is we are going to run everything from the top down. You know, we've seen the Riot LCS system, and now Blizzard are doing it with their Overwatch League. And let's be clear about what happened. I've said this many times. I don't think people are really listening. Blizzard told the team owners not to acquire Overwatch players ahead of their league, okay? So they say, don't pick teams up because we're going to do a draft for our league. So it's not worth your while because the team will get broken up. What they really mean is, if you have an existing contract with a player that we then want to break apart for the purposes of a draft, we would have to buy out that player. So Blizzard ultimately have kind of insisted, if you like, that teams don't acquire players in the hope that they get some good on the comeback when the league starts, because Blizzard don't want to have to spend that kind of money to buy all the players out of their contracts, which I think is fairly ridiculous. I don't see where you get off telling team organizations, which are effectively their own businesses, I don't see where you really get off telling them how to operate and run their businesses, frankly, especially when it pertains to one game almost exclusively, a game that ultimately will require the support of these organizations. The other thing that they did for the Overwatch League is they contacted a bunch of mainstream sports organizations, some of which are already in esports, but many of whom aren't. And they've told them that we're going to have this league. It's going to be a fantastic opportunity for you to get into esports. And we're going to have regionality so you can bid for a territory. You will have the complete exclusive rights to that territory and marketing and everything else. And as a result of this, the Blizzard higher-ups seem to think that the sports organization is going to come in and spend millions for the right to have franchises in this league. Now, I'm not convinced. I said this on a very lengthy Overwatch video in this channel. I don't really know if that system can work. It sounds a lot like CGS. I'm not sold on the idea of regionality in esports as things stand, and I think a lot would need to change. And certainly, in addition to that, you know, I think all the best esports grew organically. And I feel when you try to force things, it can be to the detriment of the sport itself. So all of that factored in, you know, the PEA team owners are like, hang on a minute. How we're being marginalized. We've worked with Blizzard, you know, we helped make Hearthstone a thing. We've all got Hearthstone teams. Many of them came late and obviously didn't have a part with StarCraft. We even picked up Heroes of the Storm teams and entered into those competitions. And this is one of the ways that scenes grow. Professional teams pick up players, send them to tournaments. Their fans get interested in the game. People realize it's a serious thing. It's an integral part of the ecosystem. Now, when it comes to Overwatch, they're ultimately being told you will have to bid like everybody else. But the difference is you're going to be bidding on esports money, which may as well be Monopoly money, because you're going up against some of the biggest sports organizations in the world. Now, interestingly enough, this has also coincided, with what Riot Games are doing. And Riot Games have made it abundantly clear. I speak to a lot of Riot Games employees, and Riot hate the fact that I get this level of insight. They've been trying to shut it down for years. They can't do it. I know where the bodies are buried, Riot Games. And what they want to do now internally is push out some of these esports owners and bring in bigger sports owners. That was one of the reasons why they were very happy to facilitate when the Renegade situation happened in League of Legends, and they kicked Badawi out and got rid of banned Monte Cristo, and eventually drove Monte Cristo out of their game entirely, which is something they've been wanting to do for years. The announcement that he's leaving LCK, the LCK League, was just made recently, and that obviously means he's done with the game. He's going to be focusing on Overwatch and is unlikely to ever return. I said that 2 years ago, that Monte Cristo would be getting gradually pushed out, and it's happened. So understand when I say this, I know what I'm talking about. Internally, some of these PEA teams have had pretty bitter arguments with Riot Games higher-ups. This includes TSM. There's been some incredibly bitter arguments there. Why do you think Mark Merrill is posting publicly, love me some Reggie? They had an actual very loud argument last time they had a meeting about the future of the team, the teams in the league, and revenue sharing. And as a result, the mandate coming down from Riot is, let's get as many mainstream sports organizations in as possible when we get this MLBAM deal up and running. So no wonder PEA felt they had to make their own league. They had to create something, take over something for themselves, because between the developers stripping away what they can have And between ESL and WISA trying to take control of Counter-Strike in particular, because it's still seen as virgin territory in a lot of ways, they're in a bit of a bind. And while I don't agree with their methods, or certainly the way they presented it, certainly the way they manipulated players in the whole process, I at least understand it from a self-preservation standpoint. So that's why PEA got started. But there's also another element to it. And that is, without some event that you control, there's a big chance you're just going to be the whipping boy of other leagues. And we're hugely oversaturated right now in Counter-Strike, in my opinion. I think we've got too many leagues, especially online leagues. But there is one set of people that dominate the landscape like no other. And that is MTG. MTG being the parent company of ESL, ESEA, and DreamHack. So I got sent, and I mentioned this in a few of the videos, but I haven't shown the document, but I'm going to show it now. I got sent a spreadsheet, okay? Now, what there is, there's a group. And there's a group of in this group, probably a Skype group, although they may have moved to Discord for increased security. I don't know what they do these days. But basically, there's a group. It was a Skype group. And all the major tournament organizers sit in this group, and they work with, there's a few broadcasters in there. There's, all the important people, the people that you would need to talk to. And what they do is they try and plan each other's, around each other's events to avoid overlap where possible. Now, what's interesting here is you'll remember my reporting back when I was at the Daily Dot, and people were telling me, we're in this group of ESL, and ESL just don't listen to anything anyone says. ESL just say, we're having this event on this date. We're not willing to be flexible. We're not willing to move. You must work around us. And this is one of the reasons why so many organizations got together to push back on ESL. Remember that Grand Prix that was announced? Do you remember that? There was going to be some big tournament circuit with like PGL, Gfinity, and all these other guys in it. SIVO, MLG. Well, that never happened. Nothing came of it. And nothing's likely to come of it. People are just mobilizing to try and push back against ESL. And it's like I said, it's like people see the MTG companies as an axis of evil, and everyone else is like the fucking Rebel Alliance. You know, it's that ridiculous in esports right now. And to be honest, I see things I disagree with on both sides, frankly. So they have this spreadsheet, and I just wanted to show you how many events MTG are going to have over the course of a year. And now this is subject to change. You'll notice right at the top, you'll see there was an ESL event sort of scheduled for January, but between WESG and DreamHack Leipzig and the fact that it was just around the corner from the major, obviously that didn't go ahead. But you can see here, if we just scroll down and start getting into February, ESL Pro League's going to start. And three of the weekdays are going to be match days, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. We move into the next week, it's DreamHack Masters Las Vegas. As soon as you come back from traveling to DreamHack Masters Las Vegas, you've got ESL Pro League matches. Then immediately after that, you've got IEM Katowice. And then you're back to play in ESL Pro League. Right, and then all of a sudden you'll see ECS get into the frame. Now ECS, I think was I'll tell you what ECS is. ECS was a hastily mobilized league to push back against ESL. They got Twitch in as a principal sponsor. They're a separate company, so even though they're run by Faceit and the team owners all have a small part of equity in this project. It's a separate company, and Twitch throw a huge chunk of money into it, and they helped with setting it up and doing some parties and media stuff, but they're sponsors. They don't own it. But makes me wonder now, with this YouTube deal that was just announced, and this is an ESL deal, they're going to stream that Pro League exclusively on YouTube. My sources are telling me this is a $3 million deal to have the two seasons of ESL Pro League. And it makes me wonder, well, hang on, Twitch don't have that anymore, but Twitch do have ECS. So how hard are Twitch going to push ECS now that Arrival's on YouTube? I think things are going to get interesting from a broadcaster perspective. But anyway, you can see as we go through March, ECS comes into the mix. And look how it's scheduled. Obviously, ECS and ESL, never the twain shall meet. But by the time we get to April, there are going to be some clashes because it's just necessary. You know, you've got Star Ladder going on as well over here. Star Ladder's trying to fit an event in. And look what happens. ECS gets sandwiched between the ESL Pro League. Keep in mind, they have said they asked WESA teams for exclusivity to this league, to be exclusive to this league in 2017. As of yet, seems to be undecided and up in the air. That's what multiple sources have told me. ECS, as far as I'm aware, they haven't made that ask, but they've given equity with, I imagine, the implication being you should pick us because at least we're giving you something. But ESL and ECS, if you've chosen to be exclusive to ESL, if they make you choose, then you will no longer be able to compete in ECS. And as the specific wording in the contract says, the agreement that WESA came out and denied, saying we've never asked anyone for exclusivity to our league, just that you don't play any other games on ESL Pro League match days. Well, look how it dominates the landscape. Look how it's going to dominate this calendar. And how can I be in ECS and not play if an ESL Pro League match happens on the same day? And I'll tell you this, it won't be ESL that are flexible with their schedule. ECS would have to work around ESL. And on it goes. You can see, again, towards the end of April, more clashes. Direct head-to-head clashes now. All the while, you've got DreamHack events, also owned by MTG. Austin qualifier, Tour qualifier. DreamHack Austin happens. Back to ESL, clashing with ECS. Then you've got an ESL event and DreamHack Tour happening, supposedly, at the same time. Back to the Pro League, directly clashing with ECS. PGL tried to fit an event in. Back to the Pro League, ECS. And it's this. And meanwhile, again, look where the qualifiers are. Qualifiers taking place for MTG-owned events, DreamHack. And yes, I know they're separate companies, but they are owned by a parent company. And if MTG want to start squeezing those fucking nuts, they can do it. And I'm going to show you why. But let's just get to the end of this schedule. We'll scroll right the way through. June, ESL, then we segue into ECS, bit of a break, ECS going up against DreamHack, then you scroll down and see we've got ESL 1 Cologne going to take place, then DreamHack Valencia, and then there's this huge window which is set by players, and this is the player holiday that was talked about, so it's going to happen at the end of July, so you get some of summer, and then all through August. And you can see that in the middle of the vacation, there are ESL Pro League matches. So I imagine you will still have to play on those, even though you're technically on vacation. And you'll see as well, DreamHack have got Montreal qualifiers, Masters qualifiers. Now, eventually, it just becomes this long block of ESL and ECS going head-to-head. And that's pretty much how the year pans out. And there's not really a lot happening in December other than we know the ESL Pro League finals. Now, if you break all of this down into just hard numbers, and yes, there will be more Counter-Strike events announced. Certainly, this isn't all of them. But as things stand, if you break the calendar down into who's running what, 82%, yes, that's 82% of Counter-Strike game days in 2017 will be run by MTG. In some form. And that to me is very worrying because once you have that level of market domination, 82% share, it's very easy to start pushing other people out. It's very easy to be inflexible. And now with the money coming in and the deals that they're going to make, they'll effectively be able to pressurize teams, players, organizations into having to work with this, what is rapidly becoming a monopoly. And it does make me a little bit uneasy because that isn't what it was meant to be. Certainly, when ESL and DreamHack were at loggerheads with each other, wasn't it great? You would have an ESL event. You would have a DreamHack event. ESL would do things in a little bit of a stuffy and professional kind of way. DreamHack were a little bit more loose and fast and furious. And actually, since the MTG acquisition, despite the fact they said nothing's going to change, you've noticed it as well. They have become very similar in terms of product. One just seems to get a better tier of talent than the other. And that's about it, really. That seems to be the only discernible difference at the moment. And I can hazard some guesses as to why this might be. Now, I got the copy of the breakdown, the financial breakdown for the first quarters of the year for MTG. And this is a long document with lots of numbers. It's a bit dry. It's not particularly interesting. But you can get it too, I suppose, Sam. You'll be able to put the link in the description for me when you put this video up, won't you?
Yeah, sure.
That's so in your technical...
boring.
Yeah, that's within your technical capabilities. So there you go. So you can have a look at this MTG report. And as I said, me and Sam have had a read through. It's pretty boring. There's some all right stuff worth reading about. You know, talks about the on page three, it talks about the things they've acquired, how esports is a big part of their direction. Breaks down all the revenue, what territories create what revenue for what products. You know, the growth or lack of, if you like, for esports properties, this kind of thing. So, yes, definitely have a look if you're into that kind of thing. If spreadsheets give you erections, then you'll love this. But the bottom line is that the overall operating loss for all of MTG's esports properties is 16.6%. The numbers aren't great. They're not turning a profit on these right now. And that, obviously, some of that's going to include acquisition. Some of that's going to include expansion. You know, we know about the ESEA thing, for example, and that's going to certainly skew those numbers. But there's a Q3 one that's just come out, and it looks to have actually increased. It looks like the loss has actually got bigger. So not worrying times. It's not a huge loss. And obviously, you don't buy properties like this to immediately make money, certainly not in the media game. But one thing I will say is this. There is absolutely zero chance, and I mean zero, of any of these esports properties scaling back because of that operating loss. You might think, Richard, that's contrary to how it works. If you want to save money, surely you host less events. But the reality is no, because what you do is you host more events and you just cut corners and bottom out your costs and overheads so you can increase profit margins. Now, I'm not going to say this might be reflected in the end product. That, you know, I'm not qualified, frankly, to make those judgments. You know, I'm not a production guru. I don't know enough about the actual hands-on running of events and what those costs might be. Certainly, some people now, the gears might be turning when you think about things like tables at the Brazil finals and that kind of thing. But anyway, you know, that's for you to metabolize and, you know, process. It's not for me to make accusations. But here's what I do know about the business. The whole point is, one of the reasons why we could never get a unified circuit in Counter-Strike was because to do that, people would have to cut back on how many events they ran per year. And doing that, you are watching money fly out the window. Because more events, more market share, bigger sponsors for more money. You don't make huge profits on running live events. Sometimes you're lucky to break even. But the deals that you can bring in for those events overall for an for the operating costs, they can have huge value. Certainly, I think the big events, obviously people do make a profit on those. But again, it's not huge. It's more about the online stuff. And you almost need the online and the offline to augment each other in a business, in an event-focused business. So it's pretty crazy that we've got this situation where we've already got one parent company that owns three huge esports properties. And that's before we get into other stuff that they may have invested in and online properties and media and whatever else. Just talking about the big three. It seems insane to me that we've got this oversaturation problem. People are working really hard to try and squeeze in events and work around them, but they've ultimately filled the calendar up so much there is no working around them. How do you do it? How do you work around something that is that long? Seems to me nigh on impossible. So I don't think they're going to take backward steps. I don't think they're going to scale down. And I think that's worrying. So all of that in mind, I want to just talk about something else that's going on that maybe you didn't hear about. And that is in September of 2016, there was a big management move in ESL, which didn't really get talked about. And there's a guy called Malt Barth, who sounds like a bad guy out of Star Wars. But he's actually not a Sith Lord, as far as I can tell.
Or a beauty cleanse.
Oh, yeah, actually, a nice, refreshing Malt Barth. Yeah, you're right. good one, Sam. Well done. But he does work for ESL. But as I said, I don't think that makes him a Sith. But if we have a look here in September on his LinkedIn page, you will see something here of note. So in January 2016, he was the head of esports for MTG. So obviously he was one of the guys who presided over the MTG acquisitions and expansions into esports. And he has been involved with that and still is involved with that. That is still his title, MTG. But in September, he was made the COO. So, chief of operations for ESL. And in particular, his focus is on, like it says, operations. So their operations include events. Now, I think it's interesting that during all of this time, ESL, DreamHack, all of these people, they've all said, hey, we're all separate entities. You know, ESEA, we're all separate entities. We're not looking to, create this homogenous product that lasts a year long and covers all these territories. We will all have our distinct identities. And actually, we're in competition with each other. How interesting, then, that the head of esports from MTG is now controlling operations for Turtle Entertainment. And my sources inside of ESL tell me that Ralph Reichardt, who's always been the guy over there, has actually been taking a backward step, hasn't really been as involved, occasionally pops up to make the odd request of someone like fucking Marlon Brando in The Godfather, but that's about it. And this move here also suggests to me that this is the change. 2017 is indeed going to be the year where we need to start monitoring what MTG are going to do and how much of esports they're going to, and certainly Counter-Strike, they're going to try and take over, because that appointment there makes me think, and based on what I've been told about how he's being very hands-on in a lot of these decisions, that makes me think that MTG are really going to make a play this year, and we probably are going to see some sort of exclusivity. Now, here's what I did like, Sam. I wasn't going to put this in the video, but I'll let you do it if you want. I found him on Twitter, right? And obviously, it's not a parody account. This guy, like, talk about being in the fucking shadows. He's got 114 followers, mate.
Well,
yeah.
You know, and find this.
Yeah, mad, isn't it? Right? And you can see, look, if you look at all the things he's retweeting, ooh, DreamHack have got a new office. DreamHack are hosting tournaments. ESL and, Movistar España or Espanol have done a deal, all of this stuff. So very interesting, I think, that he's kind of just not got any followers. Maybe you might want to watch this video and follow him and see what he's tweeting and see what he's up to. Definitely keep an eye on him. Because I'm telling you, he's one of the guys making the decisions. And if ESL do end up going exclusive, either through WESA or any other means, or if it turns out ESL, DreamHack, and ESEA decide to create some sort of unified global circuit and shut everyone else out, he's going to be the guy signing off on that. So definitely just keep your eye on that there. So anyway, I wanted to present all this information to you, the community, as I always do, so you can make your judgments about what's happening in the scene. Maybe try and read between the lines when you see these moves. But also as well, you know, I'd like to think that we're at a stage now where we can all understand that we are perilously close. I feel like I'm doing the documentary An Inconvenient Truth. I think we're perilously close to the point of saturation, the tipping point, where the game is going to start to decline and crumble and die. If we don't pull ourselves back from the brink and do something to address this tournament oversaturation, something has got to be resolved, and it's only going to be resolved by all these people who want to run events coming around a table and trying to discuss what we can do to prevent that. Because ultimately, what does it matter if for 1 year you're able to milk Counter-Strike for all it's worth, completely dominate the landscape, have all of the events, but because everybody else doesn't want to give you that dominance, they're running events that directly clash with yours, the fans get bored, and the fans will go find something else to do. I don't want that to happen to Counter-Strike. I want the games to matter. I want the tournaments to be important. I want the players to not get burned out because there's one every weekend or game days that they're contractually bound to play in after a long time traveling. I want all of that to stop. And I want us to get to a point of sanity and reason where the game can be self-sustaining. Everything is vibrant and essential that's happening in the scene. It's not just a bunch of people trying to take a stranglehold and create a monopoly for themselves just for the purposes of making profit until the next esports title comes along. Rinse and repeat. So food for thought, I hope. Anyway, thanks a lot for watching, as always. Thanks for Sam for his witty one-liner. Quite a contribution to the video. Take care, and we'll see you on the next one.